So I'll talk a little bit about how we can manage our biomass and our forest plantation sustainably. So the big question that we've been posing is, can we produce this biomass specifically in forest plantations, blah-blah at pine plantations? The question I'll address is, can we do it in a sustainable manner? We know that the biomass exists, but can we do this on a long-term basis and not see any negative effects? So why forest-based? We've talked a lot about corn and switchgrass and other products. Why would we be interested in managing our forest for biomass? First of all, we already have the infrastructure in place, consistent with what's expected for large-scale production of the biofuels. And then you can say, for the most part, that we can provide some assurance of supply, I mean, with the woody feedstocks that we have on the land base. And then the fact that, you know, we recognize through ecosystem services and other management systems that our forest lands can produce more than just saw timber. And I'd like to say that nothing's new under the sun. This isn't a new premise of managing for biomass. So there are several possible options when we look at our forested systems. For the most part, at Weyerhaeuser in particular, we manage our land base controlling for the competition on the beds with the trees. But that inner bed area has a lot of, you know, hardwood saplings, a lot of different plantings that can be used for understory clearings. So that material could possibly be used. And this is a picture here from a biobaler that we brought on some of our land base. And just an example of what a, you know, what one of the bales looked like from pulling between those tree rows. We all know about the hog fuel that's left. Some of it's used for coal firing, but possibly some of that could be used for bioenergy. And lastly, when we harvest our plantations, we have these piles of debris just left. The non-merchantable material is left in these logging piles. So possibly we could use these residuals as well. And finally, something that we're doing at Weyerhaeuser is intercropping. So we have our rows of trees, but taking that area between the trees and planting a purposely grown feedstock, particularly switchgrass in our case, but, you know, it could be miscanthus or some other crop. The idea being that this energy crop would grow between these rows of trees. And at Weyerhaeuser, we're a little bit different because we do 20-foot spacing, so we have a little bit more space to work with than some private landowners may have. The idea is that we would harvest that energy crop on an annual basis, and the trees would continue to be managed for fiber and saw timber. So what are some of the challenges? These are just a few. I mean, the list could go on and on, but for the most part, we know that these evolving markets have created a little bit of tension between the different sectors of this industry. But the idea is that hopefully with this competition, we'll create a stronger market for timber and biomass. That's the vision anyway. Another issue is the biomass definition that we have now is not quote-unquote broad. It doesn't include a lot of the things that I've talked about. So that's some work that needs to be done. And finally, something that we talked about a little bit earlier is that the policies that are in place, some of them we may say are not being driven by what we call sound science. So what I hope to do today is talk about some projects that we have at Weyerhaeuser that could potentially influence some of this policy. So these are some of the sustainability questions that Catch Light and Weyerhaeuser plan to address. Essentially looking at, with these intercropping systems and these systems where we pull off these logging residuals, what happens with our nutrient cycling, what happens with our water quality, what happens with our water quantity. These are some of the issues that we feel like need to be addressed before we go full force, although it seems that we're going that way. So for those of you that haven't heard of Catch Light Energy, essentially it's a 50-50 joint venture between Weyerhaeuser and Chevron. And so the goal is to create pretty much liquid transportation fuels at scale. The idea with Weyerhaeuser providing the feedstock and Chevron using their expertise to get the fuels to customers. And all of this is based on sustainable biofuel plantings. And so I'll talk a little bit about how we plan to address and make sure that we have sustainable biofuel plantings. So Catch Light Energy has formed what we call a sustainability R&D team. And essentially there are four facets to that team. We have scientists working on the wildlife portion, scientists working on the hydrology portion. Eric Sucre here is leading the life cycle analysis model. And then Eric and I are working together on the soils component. The idea is that with this R&D team, we'll be able to have a comprehensive look at all of the environmental effects, hopefully all, the environmental aspects of this type of management that we're venturing into. So I'll talk mainly about the study that Eric and I are leading, looking at intercropping. So for the most part, the Lenore 1 sustainability study is looking at intercropping with the switchgrass and also the removal of those logging residuals that I talked about. And this is actually a picture from the deck, just an example of the type of material that's left on the site most of the time when we harvest our plantations. So what effect does this intercropping and this removal of this logging debris, what effect does this have on long-term site productivity and sustainability? So the study site is in Lenore County. It's about 30 minutes from New Bern. It's essentially eastern North Carolina. And for the most part, the stand was a 74 plantation, had a site index of 70, meaning at age 25, the stand was expected to be about 70 feet tall. So fairly productive site for this area. The soils are classified as poorly drained, but this site actually has ditching in place, so I would consider it maybe moderately drained. So before we came in and we installed this study, what we wanted to do was get a snapshot of what the site looked like before we came in and did this manipulation of our management style. So we came in and we did a lot of pre-harvest sampling, essentially getting a picture of the soil profile, getting a picture of what the nutrient levels were like. We took some vegetation index to see what the diversity was like in the understory. And essentially, we'll be able to use this information to compare at the end of this rotation with the introduction of this intercropping. And some of the samples we actually have archived. So these are our main treatments on the site. First, we have our pine treatment. Like I said, at Weyerhaeuser, we're doing 20-foot spacing. So this is our traditional pine establishment. The trees are on beds because, like I said, the site was moderately drained. And this treatment here with the intercropping, essentially we came in and we planted switchgrass in that 20-foot spacing. And the third treatment, the pine with extra row, those are essentially a vision of planting what we call less desirable trees, trees that we can pull off in 4 to 5 years and use that material for bioenergy as well. So essentially these trees along the bed are container seedlings and these are bare root seedlings. I like to say the Weyerhaeuser doesn't have a bad tree, but that's the worst of our best. So the idea, you know, is that we could go back and possibly look at some of the older genetics and maybe get a bushier tree that we kind of tossed to the side. But we didn't have anything at the time, so we just did some of our bare root seedlings. And the fourth treatment was switchgrass only. You know, obviously at Weyerhaeuser we aren't converting our plantations to switchgrass, but we wanted to have the full spectrum for our comparison. So I talked about the removal of the biomass. So within these treatments, we have two different levels. Biomass removal, meaning all of the material that wasn't merchantable was taken off the site. Biomass in place, meaning everything that wasn't merchantable was left on the site. And then the switchgrass treatment. The treatment plots are fairly large with the idea that eventually we may want to do some split plot analysis or different things of that nature. So they're 2-acre treatment plots and they're replicated 4 times. One plus with this study is we had an adjacent stand that was the same age, same soil type, essentially same understory component, and that stand will be left in place for another 5 or 10 years. So we've been using that kind of as our reference stand. We have some students looking at wildlife, so they're using that stand. The student that I'll talk about that's looking at water quality and quantity, he's also using this stand. So So that's really beneficial to be able to use that somewhat as our baseline. So these are some pictures soon after harvesting the biomass in place treatment. You can see there's a good amount of hardwood saplings and large debris left on the site. In the biomass removal, you can still see some stumps and some debris, but essentially there was a difference with the removal. You know, obviously it's not going to pay to pull everything off, but we were able to get a large amount of material off those treatments. So these are some of the general project objectives. Essentially, we want to look at the productivity. When we introduce this switchgrass, what happens with the productivity of our pond? Are we decreasing growth significantly? Is it not that big a deal? So we'll be following productivity of the pond throughout the rotation and doing clip plots looking at the productivity of the switchgrass in the intercrop area versus the switchgrass only, just trying to see how we're tweaking our system. We'll look at resource use efficiency, carbon cycling, nutrient cycling, and soil stability. The question of soil stability came up because when we think about our traditional management, we don't have entries every year. With planting and switchgrass, every year we're coming in, pulling that material off. So what happens bringing in that heavy machinery on an annual basis? On each plot, we have soil moisture and temperature probes, essentially in the interbed area as well as on the beds, trying to see what happens with the introduction of that switchgrass. We have rain gauges, and then everything is protected by electric fences because the site is pretty heavy with bare. So the soil compaction study, the idea for this, as I said, was to look at what happens with the annual harvest of that switchgrass. Another component that I didn't talk about, in order to get that site established with the switchgrass, required a lot of entries. So we also wanted to see what effect that had on soil structure. So the design was we established 8 random points within each plot, and we took measurements with the penetrometer down to 30 centimeters. So these are some of the results. This is the year after we established the site. And essentially what we did was we put the treatments in order by increasing number of entries. So the traditional pond had the least amount of entries, whereas the switchgrass only had the most entries. So the idea is that these are somewhat of disturbance classes, with 7 being the highest. So essentially what we see is there's no difference. There wasn't a negative effect of the site prep. Like I said, we'll continue monitoring this throughout the rotation just so we can have a handle on what's happening. So there were no treatment by depth differences. And when we did treatment contrast, so looking at biomass in place versus biomass removed, or looking at switchgrass only versus intercrop switchgrass, we didn't see any differences thus far. So like I said, we'll continue to track these changes, but so far the site prep did not have a negative effect on soil compaction. Another project that we're looking at is trying to look at C13. So we took some initial soil samples in 2009 to have baseline information. In 2012, we'll come back and collect soil samples again. The idea is that in that time frame, we'll have the signature from the switchgrass, and we'll be able to figure out how much carbon that switchgrass is contributing. The idea is that, you know, with these switchgrass root systems, it may be that we create another ecosystem service from the perspective of more carbon in the soil. We don't know that, but we'll be able to determine that because with switchgrass being a C4 plant and the pine trees being a C3. And then we'll have some fractionation analysis done to figure out the longevity of that carbon, if there is a greater contribution. So what I'll do now is go through some of the collaborative efforts that we have. This is just a subset, the ones that somewhat relate to soils. But what I did was ask some of the students to put together a few slides, just giving an overview of their research. And some of them actually have results, but I didn't want to steal their thunder. So if they're presenting here, I'll let you know. So the first study is our coarse-woody debris assessment with Dan Richter and Chris Buvet at Duke University. And pretty much the relevance of this is when we remove the coarse-woody debris, we know that we're affecting the carbon and nitrogen characteristics on the site but how significant is that impact? Will we have to come back and do some supplemental fertilization? Will we have to change our silvicultural practices? So the objective for their study was to estimate the total amount of carbon and nitrogen that were removed. And the way they did it, they just separated it into debris management types. So biomass in place versus biomass removed versus the switchgrass treatment, where we actually root raked all of the debris off the site. And two different methods were used, the pile estimation method as well as the liner inspect method. So the pile estimation method, essentially on those treatments where we remove the biomass, what I asked the operator to do was pile that debris along the edges of the plot. This way we can come back and get an estimate of how much was actually taken off. So this is a picture of one of the piles from those treatments. And what Chris did essentially was GPS this pile to get an estimate of size, and then we took an excavator and actually sorted through all of the debris. Very time consuming, but he separated it based on pine and hardwood and did some carbon and nitrogen analysis in the lab. With the line intersect method, essentially he just did the equilateral triangles where everything that touched those triangles, we took an assessment of how much coarse woody debris was on the site. Dr. Brian Strum and Kevin Minnick at Virginia Tech are looking at soil carbon and nutrient cycling, and Kevin actually has a poster tomorrow presenting some of his results. For the most part, we don't know how this switchgrass intercropping. I mean, there have been agroforestry experiments. We've seen a lot of the switchgrass research alone. But how does this intercropping affect our carbon cycling and storage? And will we end up having to supplement significantly with fertilization, or is switchgrass fine with just a small amount of fertilization? Their research will help us determine the nutrient requirements. So the objective is to look at how the switchgrass alters the fractions of carbon and then the cycling of the nutrients. So they'll quantify labile and recalcitrant pools, and then they'll look at nutrient availability with the ion exchange membranes. So for those that aren't familiar, for the most part, the exchange membranes give us an index of nutrient availability. So we have the exchange membranes within the interbed region as well as in the bedded region. And the idea is that we'll be able to see how the switchgrass is manipulating the system as far as nutrient availability. And so this collection and replacement occurs every 5 to 6 weeks. Doctors Mike Strickland and Bradford are at Yale University, and they're focusing on soil microbial communities. For the most part, we know that with these different inputs, there's a possibility that we could actually influence the microbial community function. And, you know, hence that translates into how the nutrients cycle and their availability. And Mark has done some work that has shown that the introduction of C4 grasses in a deciduous forest actually increased the loss of carbon. So we'd like to determine if this actually is the case in our pond system. So what they'll do is, first of all, they'll determine if there is a shift in the functional community, in the functional composition of the communities, and then determine if there's a greater loss of carbon. And they'll do this with some CRB analysis as well as some carbon isotope analysis. Dr. O'Neill and Jessica Peace at Roanoke College are looking at microinvertebrate communities. Essentially the same with microorganisms. They're playing a key role in our nutrient cycling. And they have an idea that we can use these populations as indicators of soil quality. So essentially they'll look at the potential for using different microinvertebrate communities as monitoring tools. And if it's successful, then they can see if there's a trend with the different treatments. So they'll extract the invertebrates, count them, and then use the ISA analysis just to see if they can identify any trends in the management having an effect on soil quality. And lastly, we have a couple researchers at NC State that are looking at water quality and quantity. Essentially, when we introduced this switchgrass, talked about it a little bit earlier, what happens with the amount of water that's being used? We have a vision that technically it could be more water, but how significant is that difference? Are we going to run into some deficits within our system? So they're looking at groundwater level, and that's recorded every 15 minutes, so they'll have information for that. I talked about the soil moisture sensors that are recording every hour. And for quality, they're taking grab samples on a monthly basis. We did fertilize the switchgrass, so hopefully we'll be able to see if there was some transport of those nutrients that we added or if everything was used within the system. So this is a schematic of what they're doing. All of the plots are divided by ditches on each side. So what they've done is they put the wells and the water level recorders at plot center, and then they have them along the edge of the ditch so that way they can get an idea of transport off the plot. And this is set up on each plot as well. So can we produce this material in a sustainable manner? We'll know soon. Like I said, Kevin's presenting this year, and hopefully we'll have more results presented each year. But the idea behind this research is to hopefully develop some site-specific prescriptions. Obviously, Weyerhaeuser is not planning to do this on our entire land base. What we'll be able to do is figure out what we can and cannot do. There'll be some systems where the productivity is too low and you don't want to max the system out. There'll be some systems where the slope is too steep and you don't want erosion problems. So hopefully with these results, we'll be able to offer some insight as far as what's feasible and what's not feasible. I wanted to spend a little bit of time just briefly going through the other facets of the sustainability team. So this is Eric's work if you have any questions about it. For the most part, just looking at the carbon balance from forest to fuel, you know, what happens with these different components as far as a carbon perspective. And a lot of the data that we collect at Lenoir 1 will actually feed into his system to help determine the final carbon balance. The wildlife studies, for the most part, they're looking at invertebrates, they're looking at deer, they're looking at plant diversity, and the plots for these have the same treatments that I discussed, but they're 25 acres. So it's a larger area which is needed for wildlife studies. And these studies are actually in Mississippi, and the collaborators that they have so far are Mississippi State and Nicasi. And finally, the hydrology studies led by Jamie Nettles are looking at something similar but on a larger scale to Julian's work at NC State. What happens with water yield, what happens with timing of flow, essentially, like I said, it will be the same treatment, but it will be on a watershed scale. And one of the studies is in North Carolina. Some of you may be familiar with Carteret. So they're taking that older study and converting it to an intercrop system, a full switchgrass system, or a pure pine system. And then they're establishing two new watershed studies in Mississippi and Alabama. And that's all I have.